morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Tata Steel Limited Q2 FY20 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal the operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Samita Shah from Tata Steel Limited. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Good morning. Welcome to the call to discuss our results for the second quarter of FY20. I have with us our CEO and MD, Mr. T.V. Narendran, and our CFO, Mr. Koushik Chatterjee. We will be discussing the presentation which has been uploaded on our website. I just want to mention that we will take calls, not just on questions, not just on Tata Steel India, but also in Tata Steel BSL and Tata Steel Long Products. We also have the audio link for our retail shareholders, and we will take any questions which come from them, which we have already not answered. Before I hand this over, I would like to mention that the entire discussion today will be governed by the safe harbor clause on page two of our presentation. Thank you, and over to you, Naren.
Yeah, thanks, Samita. I'll start with the macroeconomic and industry situation. As you know, amongst all the key geographies, almost all the key geographies face a slowdown due to the ongoing trade friction. Amidst a weak demand environment, steel prices declined by more than $100 per ton over the last year. While iron ore prices have come off their peaks and coking coal has softened, the meaningful benefit of the same is yet to flow through, and this has led to a drop in industry margins. In India, the steel price was marked by demand weakness on the back of a persistent liquidity issue, weak investment sentiments, and seasonal impact of heavy and prolonged monsoons. A slew of economic measures announced by the Indian government and the recent rate cuts by RBI to address liquidity issues should yield benefits over the next few months. Moreover, with the end of the monsoon season and the onset of the festive season, we hope there is a pickup in overall consumption and steel demand. Moving on to our performance during the quarter, in this weak environment, our India business, which includes Tata Steel standalone, Tata Steel BSL, and Tata Steel Long Products, grew by 4% quarter-on-quarter to 4.13 million tons. We maintained crude steel production at 4.5 million tons, and our India volumes now account for more than 60% of our consolidated volumes. We have successfully maintained our sales volume in segments like the industrial products and project segment and branded products and retail segment. There has been a reduction in our auto segment sales, and as you know, the auto sector has witnessed a significant slowdown, and this has been offset by higher exports. Tata Steel Europe profitability remained weak, mainly due to the weak market conditions. We have initiated a transformation plan with an aim to make it self-sufficient and cash positive, and have started making some progress on the same. Some comments on our key subsidiaries and large projects. Tata Steel BSL continues to improve utilization rates and operating KPIs. It has developed steel for skin panels for India's largest auto manufacturer and has successfully commercialized skin panel steel for commercial vehicle segment as well. It has also received approvals for X70 API-grade steel orders for cross-country pipelines and city gas distribution projects. Tata Steel Long Products completed its acquisition of its iron ore mines during July 2019, and this will improve its cost structure. The team continues to work on stabilizing the newly acquired facilities and has made good progress in improving various operating parameters. These benefits and the initiatives they are undertaking in the marketplace will help them counter the downturn in auto, the key customer segment. Moving on to Kalinganagar Phase II expansion, we are prioritizing on the pellet plant for cost reduction and the cold rolling mill for the value addition. Both these facilities will be commissioned in the next financial year. We are reorganizing our footprint in India, and the merger with Tata Steel BSL is already announced, and we are consolidating our wires business into Tata Steel Long Products, which will be our vehicle for long products. We are also folding our multiple subsidiaries into four verticals: long products, downstream, mining, and infrastructure to drive scale, synergies, and simplification. I will now hand over to Koushik to comment on our financial performance. Thank you.
Thank you, Naren, and good morning to all of you. I would like to share some highlights of our financial performance. Our consolidated revenue were about 34,579 crores for the quarter, and our consolidated adjusted EBITDA was 4,018 crores. These numbers do not include our Southeast Asian operations as they continue to be classified as held for sale. Tata Steel India, which includes Tata Steel BSL and Tata Steel Long Products, along with Tata Steel standalone, recorded revenues of 20,204 crores with an adjusted EBITDA for the quarter at about 3,817 crores. The EBITDA margin of the Tata Steel India group stood at about 18.9%, and the average adjusted EBITDA per ton was 9,238 rupees. The Tata Steel standalone adjusted EBITDA margin was about 22.4%, and the EBITDA per ton on an adjusted basis was about 11,200. Moving on to Tata Steel Europe, the revenues were flattish on a quarter-to-quarter basis at about 1.62 billion pounds in the second quarter of the financial year, as compared to 1.63 billion pounds in the first quarter, as marginally higher deliveries were more than offset by the sharp reduction in the average selling prices in Europe. The EBITDA for the quarter was about 19 million. And as mentioned earlier, we are working to make it more cash self-sufficient and cash neutral by the end of the financial year amidst the very challenging market conditions. The consolidated reported profit after tax for the quarter stood at 3,302 crores, which works out to in a non-annualized diluted EPS of about 29 rupees per share for the quarter. The reported PAT includes significant tax-related impact of about 4,233 crores, and that has got three parts, includes about 2,425 crores on the adoption of the new corporate tax rate by Tata Steel standalone and some of its subsidiaries. This has been done based on the recent announcement by the Government of India, and we've evaluated our position vis-a-vis the conditions applied therein. About 661 crores arising on recognition of deferred tax asset at Tata Steel Europe on the waiver of the intercompany loans and the interest in conversion of such loans into equity, and about 1147 crores on consequent reversal of deferred tax liability by Tata Steel Global Holdings, as it will no longer receive certain payouts post the conversion of debt to equity. As you remember, during the last quarter, we had reduced our capex guidance from about 11,000 crores to 8,300 crores, while the capital expenditure for the quarter was about 2,535 crores. It takes the half-year numbers to about 4,900 crores. We expect there will be sharper reduction in the capex spend in the next couple of quarters, with a focus on recalibration and prioritization of capex in the immediate and short term, and as you heard from Naren, on the focus in Kalinganagar is on the cold rolling mill complex and on the pellet plant. I want to spend some time walking through our cash flows. We generated about 2,457 crores from operations, which is EBITDA minus interest and tax, out of which about 2,535 crores were spent on capex. About 1,028 crores were spent in India, and 1,300 crores in Europe, and much of the European capex was actually committed earlier than the previous year, so we had to complete them. The working capital increased by about 502 crores, largely on the back of increase in the finished goods inventory. We were able to minimize the impact of finished goods increase by focusing on tightening the raw material inventory, the raw material procurement, shipping, logistics, and in the whole supply chain. We have consciously chosen to build the inventory rather than cut production or increase receivables. As a result, the total cash outflow during the quarter was about 2,394 crores. This, coupled with increase in the leases, which is about 643 crores, and FX impact of similar number, the increase and increase in our cash balance by about 1,039 crores, led to a consolidated gross debt during the quarter increased by about 4,900 crores. The net debt increased by about 3,860 crores to about 106,952 crores as a total net debt. I would like to mention that post-September we have repaid about 370 million euros of scheduled repayment of debt, reducing our gross debt by about 2,900 crores. During the quarter, we tied up with about $525 million of foreign currency loan, which will help us in lengthening our debt maturity schedule. But as of September, we had drawn down a very small amount, about $40 million. But given the conditions in the financial markets, our strategy has been to make sure that the financings are tied up. Our liquidity remains robust at about 11,858 crores, comprising of cash and cash equivalent of about 4,596 crores, and a significantly higher undrawn bank lines. In terms of portfolio development during the quarter, we completed the sale of the first steel business in the UK and Cogent Power in Canada. Earlier this week, we had also signed a definitive agreement to divest our equity in Natsteel Vina in Vietnam. We remain committed to divest our holding in Tata Steel Thailand and look forward to finalize the definitive agreements and close the deal in the next coming months. With this, I'll end my commentary and I open the floor for questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone wishing to ask a question, may please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Amit Dixit from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, sir. I have a couple of questions. The first one is on borrowings. So is this gross debt level that we are seeing, is it the peak level, or we might see further increase in debt? And are you also considering cutting capex in FY21 as well? If so, what is the guidance on that?
So Amit, first of all, on the borrowing levels and the gross debt numbers, I think it's very clear that our directional journey is to reduce the debt numbers not only for this year but also for the coming years. In last year, if you recall, in given the market conditions, we had said that we would take the target of reducing about $1 billion every year. Last year, the market allowed us to reduce it by almost 18,000 crores compared to the peak debt that we had reached after the Bhushan acquisition. This year, we continued the same target to say that we will focus on the same. I can clearly see that we have about 370 that we paid, another about 300 million to be paid down. However, if you look at the overall market conditions, you know, the gross debt comes down only when you have internal generations which commensurate and facilitates the reduction of the borrowing numbers. So clearly we would like to keep the gross debt numbers at or around this level and in fact work towards reduction of the same. Just now the market uncertainty is not helping in giving a very clear path or a commitment on a number. But I can say that this is a irreversible process as far as the strategy to reduce debt and calibrate it down and make it kind of the first priority amongst all others. So I think if you look at the operational focus of the business, releasing working capital, reduction and calibration of capex, reduction and takeouts of costs are all part of the same menu to ensure that we have the free cash flows to reduce debt. So I think that path is very clearly, and that path will not end by this fiscal end. It will continue for some years. And as far as your second question is concerned, I think the guidance for 2021 will be more appropriate in the third quarter results outcome, because that's when we have a better line of sight on how the market is looking like. And secondly, it would also give us a sense as to what our future cash flow is going to be. At this point of time, I think all bets are open, but I wouldn't kind of commit a number at this point.
Great, sir. Thanks for the elaborate answer. The second question is on, you know, other subsidiaries, other trade-related subsidiaries performance. There was a sharp swing we saw. So just wanted to understand the drivers for the same and what can we expect going forward.
Those were largely the FX translation issues that have flowed in. And some of our subsidiaries have also, most of our subsidiaries have also been impacted by the current market conditions being in the same or adjacent businesses. So I think there is one performance element out of there, but also there is an FX translation issues.
Okay, and the outlook going forward for these, I mean, FX, of course, you can't, I mean, say, but as far as the performance is concerned, do you expect some improvement in performance on that front?
So, as Naren just highlighted, we are also in the process of undertaking a cluster consolidation process. I must also say that we are in the process of, as part of the simplification, targeting close to about 100 companies across the Tata Steel Group to get eliminated, and that process already started. We have started filing for it all across the world, wherever we have. So some of these things will also get addressed out of it. There are some smaller businesses which are part of our divestment list, which is also being pursued. And finally, you know, when we actually get the cluster consolidation in place, we will have one single management focus, including synergies to undertake cost takeouts and drive more better market performance. So I think that journey has also been rolled out. It doesn't happen in a quarter or two, but I think operationally some of the businesses are doing better, and some of the businesses have been impacted by the market conditions. Hopefully we should see, and most of the businesses are in the midst of taking out costs also to remain competitive. So therefore, we expect a more stable performance on the underlying basis. FX part, which is a significant part of this variation that you are asking for, obviously is an extraneous factor.
Thanks, sir. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants in this conference, kindly limit your questions to two per participant only. If time permits, you can come back in the question queue for a follow-up question. The next question is on the line of Anuj Singla from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So first question is on Sukinda Mines. So there was some news flow earlier that it has been maybe reserved for IDCOL and it will not be auctioned. So any updates you can share on that?
We have not been formally intimated yet, neither has there been a notification of the auction nor a formal intimation that it's being reserved. But as you may be aware, we are participating in other chrome ore auctions, one of which we've been formally informed that we've got it. The other one, we are waiting for a formal intimation. So we will obviously continue to be in the ferroalloys business, and if Sukinda Mine is available, we will look at it. But we have other options as well, which are with us now.
And would it be possible to quantify maybe the EBIT contribution from the ferrochrome operations in the first half? We used to have that in the earlier disclosure format, but in the new disclosure, it's not there. So any pointers you can give from that?
About 300 to 350 crores.
So this is for the first half?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, great. And secondly, I wanted to understand on the steel pricing environment. I think a significant portion of the, you know, the price decline would have already come in this quarter. But look, the benefit of coking coal will obviously come in the next quarter. So when we look at that spread or the EBITDA per ton trajectory over the next couple of quarters, any color you could give on what kind of price decline we can see, and on the cost savings, what kind of levers we have in order to offset that price decline?
Yeah. So I think from a pricing point of view, we feel it has bottomed out. And as you said, all the impacts are, you know, being kind of seen, not only the last quarter, a bit of it will be seen in this quarter also, because we already have gone through October. But I think we are pretty much at the bottom the way we look at it. Internationally, also, if you look at Southeast Asian prices, it has gone up by about $10 in the last few days. And in India also, as you must be aware, we've announced a price increase. So let's see how that sticks. It's not as if the demand is taken off, but at least we see that, the destocking process seems to have ended. And, people are buying what they need. And there is a feeling that we have bottomed out. That is as far as the prices are concerned. As far as costs are concerned, yes, there are internal actions which continue across all our units, whether it's in Europe, whether it's in India, whether it's Tata Steel BSL or Tata Steel Long Products. So those internal actions are focused on improving KPIs, synergy benefits, so on and so forth. They are playing out both in Tata Steel BSL and in Tata Steel Long Products. Long Products is still early days, it's just one quarter into it, but we see good impact flowing through in the future. The second part is of the input costs. Input costs of coking coal prices, we expect it to be about $15 per ton lower this quarter as compared to the previous quarter. And off late, we've also got some better deals on coking coal, which will benefit us in the next quarter. So I think input costs should be drifting downwards. Steel prices should be stable, hopefully moving upwards. So to that extent, yes, the spreads should slowly start improving, but we are looking forward to some more pickup in demand, and that should set us up well for the Jan-June period, which is when we normally have a good season.
And so what kind of lagged impact we can see from the steel price weakness in October to December quarter on the weakness which has already happened in the last quarter?
A bit early to say now because, our views are being recalibrated based on what's been happening over the last week or 10 days. So I think just now a bit premature to, give you a specific guidance. I think as we go along later in the quarter, we'll have a better sense. Maybe by the first week of December, we'll have a better sense of what it should look like.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll move on to the next question. That is from the line of Pinakin Parekh from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much, sir. So my first question is on Tata Europe. The first half EBITDA was 220 crores. The capex was 1300 crores. So broadly, what would have been the cash burn at Europe, because there would have been interest payments, tax, working capital requirement as well?
So Pinakin, if I look at the overall cash burn in as far as Europe is concerned, as you mentioned, the cash EBITDA was about 220 odd crores. The way you should look at it is they have about 200 million of cash, operating cash level. They had a deficit after everything else, which is after capex, after interest, loose tools and foreign exchanges and so on. So broadly, that was met by the working capital lines that they drew as far as Europe is concerned.
Thank you, sir. So my second question is on, again, going back to the balance sheet. So fourth quarter, we had a gross debt of 1 lakh crores, and the guidance was to reduce it by $1 billion. And in the first half, that 1 lakh crore has gone to 1,11,000 crores. So obviously, it has been a big swing. Now, sir, going forward, if the industry profitability were not to materially improve from here, I mean, it bounces slightly higher, but we don't go back to, for example, last year's profitability. Would the company look to raise equity to reduce debt, because net debt to EBITDA is near 5x at this point of time?
So I think before we look at equity, we also have to look at what other stuff which we are currently planning to do internally. And so there are some things that we have done. For example, there is a very significant capex recalibration. All of it has not yet hit in the second quarter, because we actually started looking at it towards the mid of the first quarter, but by the time we started actioning, it was the second quarter. And there will be a ramp down on the capex numbers to focus on priorities and recalibration and what is critical versus what is discretionary. So that whole framework is what we are certainly working on. So the there is a ramp down time also which will happen. As you know, we have already announced the reduction when we did so in the first quarter, that from about 11,000 we are coming down to about 8,000 crores. So we are seeing what else we can do. However, you have to also recognize that there are certain capex which is related to the sustainability of the business, the criticality of the business, the safety of the business. So those are not something that we can compromise on. Then there are working capital initiatives, and frankly, as far as India is concerned, we've taken very significant steps, especially on the raw material side, stores and spare side. There are new models and new structural changes that we are looking at. In Europe, that activity has started, and I am very hopeful that by the end of this year, we will certainly have more outcomes, because it is critical to do that. The increase that you see in the 1 lakh crores to 111 has two, three things. One is the increase of about 4,000 crores on account of the acquisition of Usha Martin. The second is there has been a lease impact which is about, I think, 2,500 to 3,000 crores. So if you do that, it's almost about 7,000 crores. Then there are FX issues, which is roughly about 650 towards that kind of a number. And if you take the first quarter also, I think the total will be close to over 1,000 crores. So 8,000 crores of that 11,000 crores is on account of this. Of the balance, there is about 1,000 crores which we have raised and it is sitting in the cash. So the net impact of the increase is roughly about 2,000 to 2,500 crores, which is on account of the working capital issues, the lesser internal generations to look at, which we, so that's first priority is to reduce that. So whatever has picked up on the working capital should come down based on our plan to reduce the working capital, liquidate the working capital, in which some part of it was conscious, like the finished goods inventory was conscious, because holding the inventory, especially at semis level, gives us much more optionality than to hold it in debt or reduce the production numbers, which has a very significant impact on the cost. So those two, these calibrations are actually done on a monthly basis and we take these calls. So first priority is to liquidate the peak level which has happened due to the short-term nature of the business. Then the next priority is to pay off the scheduled debts, which I said is about 600 million this year. In the second half, we've already done 370 and there's a similar number. And we have opportunities to do more if we have the liquidity. The third thing is to then look at what other stuff we can do from an internal generation point of view to reduce it. So $1 billion obviously is a kind of an all-weather period, not at the time we are just now. But we should certainly, this is an irreversible process as far as Tata Steel is concerned. And we will certainly look at targeting that. Even if we are less than that, doesn't matter, because we need to keep reducing our debt numbers. And last year we closed at about debt EBITDA of, I think, 3.3 or 3.4. And we will set our first target is to be at that level. So everything is subservient to those levels of debt and the ratios that we talked about.
Understood. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Indrajit Agarwal from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. Two questions from my side. First, you talked about some of the cost-saving initiatives in Europe. Can you quantify what kind of benefits on an annual level we can have from these initiatives?
So, I think, initiatives cover a significant range of activities. I think when we, at the end state level, I would say at around, it should certainly be above 150 million pounds, but that's at the end state level. There is a path to go towards that. So there is a breakout, is a breakup of initiatives which are focused on fixed cost reductions, and there are initiatives which are focused on operating KPI improvements. If you look at last year and some part of this year, we've also had some operational setbacks which has increased the cost, and that is the first priority in our colleagues in Europe that they are doing. Similarly, there is a smarter CAPEX implementation possibilities that we are working between the European team and the Indian team. As you know, in India, we have significant capabilities now, having done not only a 3 million ton greenfield, but the kind of CAPEX that we spend. So we have significant commercial leverage and technical leverage, which we are now combining to do the same stuff with less capital and resources in Europe. And then there are a slew of other activities, which includes taking out, you know, Europe has multiple sites, and how do we actually manage those sites more effectively, and so that we can get more synergies and technical help. And there's a lot more working happening between India and Europe at this point of time. So I would certainly say that at this steady state, when we reflect back, we'll certainly have a annual impact of about 150 million pounds at least. And the opportunities also keep coming up as we dig deeper. And we have the whole team is working very in a focused manner to do that. It doesn't come in a quarter. It doesn't come in even two quarters, but you see the trajectory coming in. So 2021 will be a very good inflection point, somewhere at the H2 of 2021, where we can define that these are the things that we have done, and it's crystallized in a more significant manner.
I think the focus in Europe, as you said before, is to be cash positive. So all their initiatives are focused on unlocking value there, as well as managing the cash spend accordingly.
Thanks for the elaborate answer. The 220 million cash burn number that you mentioned in first half, that is GBP, right?
Yes.
Okay. And second question is on working capital again. So from here on in the second half, can we assume that there will be release of working capital instead of build-up of working capital?
Yes.
Right, and one more question if I can push through. In the balance sheet of Consol, there is a line item in the asset side called right of use assets. Can you just explain what is this regarding?
These are the lease assets.
All right.
Under A16.
Okay, that helps. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chintan Shah from Investec Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. So just continuing with one of the prior questions, so in the last quarter you had given a beautiful explanation about a debt reduction plan which included Southeast Asia sale, working capital release, and lower capex. Sir, can you give something similar, basically how do we look at it at the debt levels from now till the year end, given all these three variables are something which are broadly in our control?
Yeah, so Chintan, so we have a scheduled repayment of about 500 million in the early part of Q4 this fiscal. I think there are some of the divestments which are ongoing. For example, the one in Thailand, we are progressing fairly well. So I'm also hoping that we should be very close to a closure by end of this quarter or early next quarter. And then we have sold the Canadian assets in electrical steels. We realized about 25-30 million pounds on that. There are some of the smaller assets which is also being looked at. And I think I can safely say that we are looking at all corners of the company across all geographies. We've just closed a Vietnam transaction in Nat Steel Vietnam for about 5 million and everything counts. So I think we're looking at all areas to see as to how do we monetize assets, investments, and ensure that we get to that number. As I said, that the debt reduction is an irreversible process, and both from our leadership team perspective, board perspective, this is something that we is the primary focus. So we are kind of looking at keep reducing these numbers, even if we, as I said, don't hit a billion, we should be happy to kind of focus on that. Narin,
I think, yeah, I'll just supplement and link it to what we said last time. I think there are a few levers. One lever is obviously cost takeouts. So that continues and maybe getting accelerated because of the pressures from the marketplace. The second lever is on CapEx. As we've already announced, we've cut the CapEx guidance from what we started off in the beginning of the year, and we keep relooking and recalibrating that. That's the second part. The third part is obviously EBITDA, where we are dependent more on market. Prices have been dropping faster than the cost that we've been able to take out, and hence the margin squeeze. But as you described some time back, I think the rate of price drop has dropped, whereas we expect that the cost takeout will continue. So while we do expect Q3 prices to be lower than Q2, but we are not giving a specific guidance now, simply because of the fact that the market seems to be at a little bit of an inflection point. The fourth area, which we said, is working capital, where again, in the last few months, we have added to inventory. Particularly in India, we have not cut production. So as a consequence, there is a bit of an inventory buildup, but we see that getting reversed during Q3 and Q4, and we will release cash from that as well. So I think the levers which are in our control, the work continues, whether it's CapEx optimization, whether it is working capital. Yes, it was more adverse for the last 3-4 months, but we will release working cash from working capital over the next few months. And, you know, so what the levers in our hand, we are, I think, doing whatever needs to be done.
Right. Sir, what is the number that one should pencil in for CapEx for second half and the working capital release?
So in terms of CapEx, we had given a guidance of around 8,000 crores for the full year. For the first half, we have spent about 4,500. So second half will be less than what we spent in the first half. And as Kaushik explained, some of what was spent was already what was pre-committed in Europe before we, you know, kind of optimized on the CapEx. In terms of working capital release, at least in the next few months, we expect 1,000 crores to be released. And then depending on the markets, we look for Q4 to see if something more can happen.
Right. Sir, do we have any covenants either for India or Europe, specifically given the leverage has moved up pretty sharply?
So Europe, no. I think we are almost covenant-free from that perspective. India, we do have, but those they have significant headrooms at this point of time.
That helps. Sir, you have moved to a lower tax rate regime.
Excuse me, Mr. Shah. Sir, may we request that you return to the question queue for a follow-up question? There are participants waiting for their turn. Mr. Shah?
Yeah, I don't have much option. I'll get back. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. The next question is on the line of Bhavan Chera from Enam Holdings. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning, sir. So your March 19 and even September CWIP is close to 17,000 crores. Can you know how much of that would be related to the Kalinga Phase 2 project? And what is the total projected capex now at Kalinga over next 3-4 years, whatever? What is the total project cost now at Kalinga?
See, that CWP, CWIP is also, has a combination of assets all across the group, which includes, say, India. So Kalinganagar is roughly spent about 2,000 crores, and the total project size is about 23,000 crores. And as
totally,
I said,
sorry, or not 23,500
crores, including the mining investments and so on. So I think we just need to focus. On your question about the CWIP, I think it is mixed between Kalinganagar. In Jamshedpur, we have other projects. There are mining projects like in Conbond. We have projects in the Canadian number is also pretty significant in Canada, where we are completing the concentrator just now. It's a mix of across the board. Then there is projects in Europe, in Netherlands, which is the Star project, which is also a significant project which is not fully capitalized. So
that's a CWIP of across all of the areas. As far as the spend on Kalinganagar is concerned, I think we will be, as I said, in better shape in the third quarter results to talk about the next year and the year after. The focus just now is to get the commissioning of the cold rolling mill complex, which helps in the value added product mix, and the pellet plant, which helps significantly on the cost side by somewhere in the end of next year.
Yeah. So my second question is on, if I see your slide 11, which gives details of volume and breakup there. So our quarter two exports from India were roughly 0.64, which is almost double the quarter one number. And I assume the profitability in export was much lower than the domestic profitability. And obviously this has been due to the demand, significant demand slowdown. So what should be model for second half or quarter three? Is this run rate of exports going to continue? Has it come down? If any thought process you can throw on this?
Yeah, I think for the year, our guidance is around 2.4 million tons between Tata Steel BSL and Tata Steel India. So between the Jamshedpur, Kalinganagar and school plants. The original guidance was around 1.6 when we started the year. So we've increased by a million tons. We are pretty much doing about 300,000 tons a month, which may come down to about 250,000 tons a month in Q4, unless the domestic market picks up very sharply. So yes, the export realizations are lower than the domestic realizations, but you know, it contributes positively, and hence it's better for us to export than to shut production.
Thanks a lot, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Saumil Mehta from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, sir. First is on now, we have accumulated losses at Bhushan Steel, and in the new tax regime, how should we look at tax rate over the next 3-4 years? Will we be under MAT? Any guidance on that?
Are you talking about Bhushan itself, or are you talking about Tata Steel?
We are planning to have, you know, consolidate Bhushan Steel into standalone. What can be the tax advantage over there for the next 4-5 years?
So I think we, you know, from an effective tax rate perspective, from excluding Bhushan, we would be at about 25% level, which is the option that we have selected. Yes, Bhushan does have accumulated tax losses, which based on Bhushan's tax losses as well as our capex spend in KPO in particular, we keep doing this calculation, but I think it will be better to look at it post the merger happens, because that is the time when we will get the definitiveness both on the timing perspective.
Okay. Sir, in terms of our auto contracts, have they been renewed, and what is the approximate change we have seen for the 6-month contract, what we have?
Yeah, so some of them have been finalized, not all of them have been finalized. So, but yes, it is certainly, I would put it this way, when we contracted the auto prices in March, April, it was reflective of the prices then. When we contract now, it is more reflective of the prices now, though obviously auto is always at a higher level than the commercial grades. So it will certainly be lower than what it was in the last first 6 months contract. But it would be unfair for me to give a specific number because some of the negotiations are still going on.
Okay, okay. And my last question is on, when you say the other trade-related operation, I assume there is a large FX component. Now, assuming, you know, FX stays stable over the next 6 months or a year, what is a pure X of FX, the EBITDA, the other trade-related which can be done? FY19, if I look at that number, was 490. I don't know what was the FX component over there. So going forward, what can be that component?
So there are, I think if I were to articulate the composition of that change, it's been the FX which has been the maximum part of it. Other than FX, the number is not so significant. It is less than 100 crores.
So the last year number of 489, of that 100 odd would be the pure operational. Is that fair assumption? And
yes.
The rest would be
yes.
Okay, okay. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vishal Chanda from MG Global. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, sir. So my first question was with respect to, you know, where are we in terms of steel?
Sorry to interrupt, Vishal. Sir, your voice is breaking up.
Yeah. Sir, my first question was with respect to the steel prices in the domestic market. With respect to the average of the second quarter, what has been the change so far in steel prices, sir?
So let me put it this way. Like I said, in October the prices dropped by about 1,000 or 1,500 bucks compared to September. Okay, and currently we have asked for a price increase of about 750. So that's the status as of now. Market seems to have taken the 500 to 750 rupee price increase, but let's wait till the end of the month. That's when a lot more action happens. And because the market seems to be at a bit of an inflection point, we don't want to just now give a guidance which, you know, is difficult to give. But like I said, this quarter will be lower than last quarter. How much lower will depend on how much we can pick up in November and December. So, you know, so that's why we are not giving a specific guidance. Yeah.
And the benefit of coal pricing would be just about $15 for the quarter.
Yes. Let me put it this way, $15 in India, 15 euros in Europe.
So net-net, with the steel prices also declining and the coal benefit not really adding much, then the spread should remain more or less at the current levels.
So two things are happening. Yes, spreads will stop shrinking, may start improving a bit. Secondly, more the way I look at it, what is significant for this quarter is the market sentiment changes a bit. You will get a lot more inventory out of the system and you will release cash because you will do more sales. That to me will be the bigger impact, and the spread improvement impacts will come more in Q4.
Got it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashish Kejriwal from IDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, sir. In standalone, if I'm looking at the other expenses, that has reduced sharply in the second quarter as compared to the first quarter. So, first of all, you know, is there any one-off in that? And if not, how do we see it going forward?
So, in the standalone, the conversion charges and other cost takeouts have happened. For example, we have got... you know, because of the lower production in terms of some of these downstream entities, the conversion rates have been lower. There have been also decrease in rates. There has been a busy season surcharge which has been reduced in India in the railway side. Then the purchase of power has been lower. And the royalties have been lower because the rate of iron ore has come down, and the coal has also come down, and therefore these are the factors which has actually gotten the lower expenses level.
Okay. And sir, secondly, though you have answered in one of the questions of other trade related operations, but this was primarily only in Tata Steel global operations which deal with the working capital.
Yes.
And is affected by forex fluctuations?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, but at the same time, when we are seeing a console adjusted EBITDA, I think we try to adjust that forex fluctuations in that. Even after that, the number seems to be on a lower side of around 4,000 crore. So is there anything else which we are missing here?
No, I think there is a compensatory impact between Tata Steel Global Holdings and Tata Steel India. That's what you see in the console, because this post-elimination.
So, I mean to say, when we are deriving EBITDA from the P&L which we report to BSE and the adjusted EBITDA which we give, there is a difference of just 200 crore. And if I'm looking at the segmental where we are seeing other trade-related operations, there was a delta of around 600 crore in this quarter versus last quarter.
Yeah, can we take that and explain to you offline? That's one opportunity.
Sure.
And there is a bridge that we need to explain to you, which we can do that. Essentially, in relation to, there is a 500 crores of FX swing on external company debts and receivables at Tata Steel Global Holdings. And the second quarter was 341 crores of loss.
So where do we report, sir, that in P&L?
In the other expenses on the console side.
Okay, so you are saying 341 crore loss was there in first quarter, whereas this quarter it increased to 500 crore?
No, first quarter was a 164 crore gain and the second quarter was a 344 crore loss. So that's why you see the swing.
Okay, okay. Yeah, thank you, sir. And anything on iron ore mining auctions which are going to happen? Are we going to participate in that?
Yeah, so we will be, I think the Orissa government has notified about 18 blocks. I think we are participating in about 10 of them, I think. Some of them for captive and some of them for commercial mining.
I don't have any entity for commercial.
Fair enough, sir. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Ashwin Kumar from Nippon India. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, sir. This is Ashwini from Nippon India Mutual Fund. My question to Mr. Narendran is, are you looking at alternatives when this Thyssen thing failed? Are you looking to selling that part of the business? What is the attempt there? And second is, did monsoon impact any of the sales situation in the last 2 or 3 months, because the monsoon was extended this time? And when the recovery begins to happen, what part of the business basically because of the demand recovery you have the scope to increase prices?
Yeah, thanks, Ashwini. On the first one, you know, what we had said earlier was the European team should focus on becoming cash positive and drive a transformation program, simply because we've also felt that over the last 2-3 years, everyone has been quite distracted by the Thyssen transaction, and you know, we need to get our eye back onto making sure that the operations performs at the levels at which we expect it to perform. So that was basically the focus. But we are constantly reviewing the situation, and we will take a call as we go along. Obviously, you know, nothing is cast in stone, and you know, our first preference is for the business to be able to stand on its own. But we are constantly reviewing if the business is able to do that. So that is as far as the first part question is concerned. The second question, yes, monsoon normally has an impact. Every year, the July-September period is the weakest from a demand point of view. Construction activity typically slows down in monsoon, and the consequence of that is felt in steel demand, which was felt this year also. But you're right, the intensity of the monsoon and the prolonged monsoon makes it worse. It also makes it worse that some markets were flooded, some parts of Maharashtra, if you look at Kerala. So there are specific sales in some of those states which get impacted more because of access issues and business activity slows down because of the floods. So that impact was also there, you know, and we felt that. Your third question on the recovery and the impact it will have on prices, I think for auto, I don't think, you know, we will see a price impact. We want to see a demand impact simply because auto contracts are 6 months, so whatever we finalize now is valid till March. But what helps is if the auto demand picks up, then our product mix gets richer. Because what has effectively happened is while our sales to other segments like distribution and branded business and the industrial products and projects has been consistent and constant, stayed where it should be. But auto has shrunk by almost 700,000-800,000 tons, and a lot of that has found its way in the export markets, whereas one of the previous analysts asked, the realizations are low. So the impact on the mix is higher. So if auto picks up, even if the price doesn't increase, overall the consolidated prices improve because of the mix impact. So so there, even if the price doesn't improve, we see an improvement in the realizations on a consolidated basis. The other segments are pretty much very fickle. Once restocking starts, then prices can move up. Just like it fell 10,000 rupees in the last 1 year, you know, it can also move up quite fast, you know, if the demand picks up, because we also believe that a lot of people in the system have destocked over the last few months, thinking that every month the prices will be lower than the previous months. So the demand shrinkage was a bit exaggerated because of destocking. Similarly, the demand pickup may also get exaggerated when people start restocking. And the last comment I want to make on prices is, all of us from India, all the steel companies in India have been exporting into Southeast Asia. Hot rolled coils have basically been setting the prices in Southeast Asia. So if the Indian market picks up a bit, we see it having a fallout on Southeast Asian markets, and which is already being felt, because since nobody from India is aggressively chasing customers in Southeast Asia, the steel prices in Southeast Asia have already also gone up by $10, because Chinese exporters were not very active in Southeast Asia over the last few months. The Russians were quite active, but normally they slow down during the winter months because of you know, fewer ports being available, etc. So I think some of the signals are positive. If there is a demand pickup, then we will hopefully see a much better situation.
So, sir, can one assume that for 60-70% of the total volume of Tata Steel India, basically you, as the demand picks up, and let's say even if the prices, global prices, were to remain constant here or near $10-$20 range, you have the flexibility to increase prices? Can one basically, is this hypothesis right?
That's correct. That's correct. Also because the imports into India has also been slowing down over the last few months. So there is that situation. I think, you know, 60-70% what you've assessed is right. Certainly that level of volume can see a price pick up if the demand picks up.
Thank you, sir, for the detailed reply. Wish you the very best.
Thanks, Ashwini.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Kamlesh Jain from Prabhudas Lilladher Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Sir, one question on this ferrochrome or the chromo business. So the mines which we have got in the auctions, like say 97 or 200 odd percent premium. So this profitability, which is around 350 crore in the first half, and I believe in annually it would be 700 to 800 crore. So what impact would we see once these mines come in operations and the Sukinda goes into the fold of the state government?
Firstly, I don't want to comment specifically because we've not been formally intimated on both the mines. We've got some intimation on one mine. But yes, I just want to give you a little bit on the, yes, the cost of chrome ore will certainly be higher than before, because earlier you were getting it at cost and now you are paying a premium for it. But the value for us is more in the beneficiation that we do, the value addition that we do. We are a very big player in the ferrochrome market in India and globally. So it comes from the value addition. It comes from the cost takeouts that we can do, you know, and run a mine efficiently. The other aspect which I also want to mention is Sukinda, even if it was with us or we had got it, would have required significant capital expenditure, because we would have had to do underground mining. You know, we had exhausted most of the resources which could be accessed through open cast mining, whereas in the new mines that we bid for, we don't need to incur significant capex because we can do open cast mining there. So these are, we've been in this business for almost 100 years, so we look at these very deeply before we quote, and obviously the business has to make sense, and you know, when we get these mines, we have it for the next 50 years, so we can plan our growth in this business, you know, without having the concern about, you know, the mines not being available with us, you know. So I think that's the comfort we get, and that's why we have bid what we bid, but I think we're waiting for the formal intimation from the government.
And so lastly, I know...
I just want to clarify, the premium is nowhere near 100%. Yes, it's high, but it's less than 100%. Yeah.
And so lastly, I know you have answered that question many times. If I need to see the October realizations as compared to the July to September average, or the realizations which we have reported in the quarter, so how the gap would be there, or how much lower the realizations current would be as compared to the average of the previous quarter?
So, as I said, Q2, I mean, or rather, you know that Q2 is about 4,000 rupees below Q1 as what we've reported, you know, and like I said, I would say currently the prices are maybe about 2,000 to 3,000, in that range below Q2, but let's see what happens in the next couple of months.
Thanks a lot, sir.
Thank
you. We'll move on to the next question. That is on the line of Ritesh Shah from Investec Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, my first thing is, you indicated our interest even in commercial mining for a few blocks. Can you please elaborate on this? And are we trying to recoup, say, hypothetically, if Sukinda doesn't come back to us? So, sir, that's the first question, sir.
Sukinda, let me put it this way. Sukinda, the plan for Sukinda or the chrome ore business is different. The chrome ore business, like we just described, Sukinda, we don't know yet whether it will be notified for auction or whether it will be reserved for public sector. But we have not waited for that. We have gone ahead and participated in two other chrome ore mines. I think we are successful. We are waiting for we've got formal intimation on one. We are awaiting the formal intimation on the other. And that sets us up well to continue our ferroalloys business. Maybe the profitability will be a bit lower from in the immediate term because of the cost that we have to pay. But over a period of time, we believe we can continue to unlock a lot of value because we know this business. We have the customer relationships. We have the beneficiation facilities and the processing agents with whom we have tied up, which makes us the largest chrome ore player in the country and one of the largest in the world. So that is one part of it. And we have bid under TS Alloys, which is going to be called Tata Steel Mining. And Tata Steel Mining is going to be the vehicle for all our commercial mining activities. And for the iron ore mines also, the commercial mines that we will participate in, we will participate in as TS Alloys or Tata Steel Mining, as it's going to be eventually called. And since we have 100 years experience in mining, and particularly in the states of Odisha and Jharkhand, we believe we bring a lot to the table, to the mining industry in India. So far, we've been a captive player. We are doing 30 million tons of mining, so we are one of the largest mining companies in India. And I think the commercial mining vehicle allows us to capitalize on that knowledge and capability.
That's helpful. So second question is, I'm just taking forward the prior question on the pricing part. If one looks at the Chinese steel prices, haven't declined year to date to the extent what you have seen in, say, Europe or US or India. Sir, what would you ascribe this? Is it to Tangshan or is it to scrap? And how would you couple this thing up with the Turkish sanctions? So what I'm fearing is, are we looking at more prices or price declines locally? Or ADD will be a savior over here? And if you can couple this with how has a behavior for SRC been in the marketplace? Have they been chasing market share or is it they're playing a level playing field?
Yeah. Okay, let me try and answer some, if not all, the questions. Basically, it would be unfair to blame the Chinese for the situation we are in. I think if I were to say so, China's only market where the demand has grown more than what anyone expected. As you would probably be knowing, the demand in China grew at about 9 to 10% in the last 8-9 months. So China has actually consumed 80 to 90 million tons more steel than they did last year, which is almost the production in India. So as a consequence, the exports out of China has stayed stable at around 5 million tons a month, which I think the world can live with. And they have not been the price setters in Southeast Asia, which has been one of the biggest importing markets for steel over the last many years, right? So I think the price setters in Southeast Asia has been India and Russia. Russia is well poised because their cost structure is similar to people like us in India because they have their raw materials. So hence, if they can export profitably, I mean, apart from the Indian producers, I think the Russians are the people who are best poised to export profitably. And hence, Russia and India have been setting the prices. But of late, as I mentioned, we are not seeing Russia as active as they were. And if the Indian market picks up a bit, I suspect the Indian exporters, including us, will not be as active as we were. And hence, we may see prices move up in Southeast Asia, which we've started seeing some signs of. The prices, the fact that China demand has been strong is also one of the reasons why the coking coal and iron ore prices have not dropped as much as one would expect, because the rest of the world is expecting them to drop more because the domestic prices in all markets have been dropping. But because the Chinese markets have been strong, the coking coal and iron ore prices have not dropped. In fact, I guess you know that over the last few weeks, there have been exports of steel into China from Japan, Korea, India. So so China is actually pulling in steel rather than pushing out steel, right? As far as Turkey is concerned, Turkey has been a bit more of a disruptor in Europe because when the U.S. had sanctions, Europe becomes the easiest market for Turkey to send steel to. Imports into Europe has been about 30 million tons, which has been pretty high level considering the demand is about 160 million tons. But the European Union is also taking some steps to provide some support, we see that playing out as well. And I think with the U.S. removing the sanctions, we expect the pressure from Turkey to be a bit less in Europe. What is interesting is over the last few days, the scrap prices have also gone up in U.S. And normally the rebar long product prices dynamic is set by scrap prices and Turkish prices. So hence we're seeing the long products prices actually started going up even in India about 3-4 weeks back before the flat product prices. So the Turkey-U.S. scrap dynamic will play out more in long products and the China iron ore coal dynamic will play out more in the flat products.
Sir, locally, behavior of SR steel in the market, how does it impact the pricing? Specifically, we have anti-dumping duty in place.
I wouldn't want to specifically comment on one of my peers, but all I can say is, you know, when the steel prices drop, from a Tata Steel point of view, our job is to make sure that, our cost position ensures that we are the last man standing. We don't want to be the only person standing, but I think... the ability of people to keep dropping prices is limited if they were to look at the economics. And I think, I hope some in the industry whose cost structures are higher will, rationalize on that. Because ultimately it doesn't make sense if you're not covering your variable cost. And I think some in the industry are close to that.
Sir, just last question, a quick yes or no is fine. Sir, will we be looking at Bhushan Power and SRC if at all, if the existing bidders take a U-turn or something?
No, not at all.
Oh, great. Thank you so much, sir. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll move on to the next question. That is on the line of Nitij Mangal from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my questions. Firstly, could you provide some details on this waiver of intercompany loan at Tata Steel Europe and the conversion into equity? These were loans between which entities and the quantum of that? And on the same line, do you also see need for any more equity infusion into Tata Steel Europe? That's the first question, please.
So, Nitish, so can you repeat the second question?
I was wondering if you see any need for more equity infusion to Tata Steel Europe, given where the profitability levels are.
Okay. So, the first question is the intercompany conversion was about £3 billion, and we also had the tax impact was more on account of the interest accrued, which we have also waived. Therefore, the deferred tax liability was reversed. As far as equity in TAC is concerned, as I think we've all through the call been saying that we need the company to be first cash neutral and then cash positive. This will happen on two counts, or needs to happen on two counts, which is working on the internal transformation program that is currently being undertaken by the company, which will have a rollout period over the period of next couple of quarters. And therefore, we would not want to, in fact, from April to September till date, we have not put in any capital into Tata Steel Europe directly. And we would maintain that way. I think there is a very sharp focus on managing Tata Steel Europe within Tata Steel Europe. While in these difficult times, there has been increase in the working capital financing, which is fine, but and the reason why I'm saying fine is because it will be paid back by the company, not by Tata Steel. And I think that is something that is clearly on the table for the European management team to deliver. So I think we are not seeing that at this point of time, not seeing as in we would not want that to be at this point of time. And the answers to the challenges needs to come from within. While it has often not happened in the past, but just now I think we have got a significant menu of opportunities to reduce or rather increase the internal cash flows to be self-sufficient.
Okay, and you mentioned the quantum was 3 billion pounds, right?
That is converted over the, that has accumulated over the last 12 years or 13 years. And this is also helps in Tata Steel Europe to kind of have their own balance sheet, which ensures that they can take some more capital from the external market on a short-term basis if required. But certainly no long-term debt on Tata Steel Europe.
Okay. Thanks. And secondly, I want to understand what kind of changes are happening on the auto contract pricing and how much of that effect has already come through in the second quarter?
Second quarter, there's no effect of on auto contract pricing because they were prices for H1 largely. So hence, the auto prices have been constant from April to September. What I explained earlier was the last contracts were reflective of the prices prevailing then, which was in March, April, and H2 contracts, which have been negotiated with some of the auto customers, are reflective more of the prices prevailing now, of course, with the premiums that we always get for auto. I wouldn't want to give a specific number because some of the negotiations are still going on, but hopefully in the next month or two, we would have closed all of that. But certainly, the H2 auto contracts will be lower than the H1 auto contracts.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be taking the last question. That is on the line of Rohan Jain from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
A quick question on the Cromore mine. So just wanted to know what is the capacity difference between Sukinda and between the two mines that we've bid for?
So if we get both the mines, we will be pretty much be able to get to the levels at which we are operating at Sukinda in the next 3 years or 4 years.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I now hand the conference over to the management for the closing comments.
Thank you everyone for joining us on this call. If there are any specific questions, we will be happy to take them offline. Thanks again and good day to all of you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Tata Steel Limited, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.